Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 39.
Tang Sanzang, the master, he sees the body and is just overcome with pity.
You get that immediate compassionate reaction from him.
Tang Sanzang chanting that spell.
Aimed right at Wukong, causes him agony, basically forces him to say, okay, I'll figure out how to revive the king.
You can feel that pressure immediately.
Totally. And Wukong, you know, he's hurting. He yells for the master to stop, agrees to this, well, seemingly impossible task.
Bringing the dead back to life.
His first thought is logical. For their world, anyway. Head to the underworld, get the king's soul.
Seems like a plan. A tough one, but a plan.
But then, Zabaji.
Ah, Baji. Always ready to stir things up.
He jumps in, tells the master, don't trust him. He was just bragging he could do it right here, in the world of the living, the Yang world.
No need for the underworld trip, supposedly.
Exactly. And Tang Sanzang, well, he's easily swayed, isn't he?
He hears that and starts chanting again.
He does. The spell starts up again.
Oh, poor Wukong.
Right. So Wukong quickly backtracks. Okay. Yang world solution it is. But not before, you know, cursing Baji under his breath.
And Baji's reaction?
He just laughs. The text says he's delighted he finally pulled one over on Wukong.
After being the butt of Wukong's jokes so many times.
It's that dynamic, isn't it? They bicker, they undermine each other, but ultimately they're stuck together.
Almost like, yeah, like difficult siblings.
That's a good way to put it. So Wukong reveals his new plan.
No underworld. What is it?
One somersault cloud jump. Straight up. Yeah. Bypassing the usual grand heavenly palaces.
Okay. Where's he going?
Directly to the 33 heavens. Specifically, Lidhen Heaven, Tushita Palace.
Home of Taisheng Laojun.
Exactly. The goal. Beg Laojun for just one pellet of the 9-turn return soul elixir.
That sounds ambitious. And very specific.
Tang Sanzang seems pretty impressed by the plan, actually. Wukong figures it's about 3 a.m., says he'll be back by dawn.
Quick trip.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
But then he adds this condition about the king's body.
What about it?
You can't just lie there. It needs company. It needs people mourning, crying over it.
Okay. And who's he looking at?
Oh, Baji knows immediately. Wukong points right at him. Says he absolutely needs Baji to cry over the body or the revival won't work.
Seriously, he needs him to cry.
That's what he says. And then it gets even better. Wukong actually starts coaching Baji on how to cry properly.
You're kidding. A crying lesson.
Yep. He says just shouting the word used is, ha, isn't enough. You need the tears too. Ha. You need both the noise and the waterworks.
Right. It has to be proper howling and wailing, full of feeling.
And Baji. Is he insulted? Does he refuse?
Surprisingly, no. He's kind of up for it. Ever the performer, right? He says, okay, watch this. What does he do?
He grabs a piece of paper, rolls it up, and sticks it up his nose.
Oh.
Yes. Gives it a couple of twists, makes himself sneeze, and instantly peers, snot, the whole deal.
Oh, my God.
And then he launches into this loud, rambling, nonsensical wail. Just pure, over-the-top fake grief. It's almost slapstick.
That's Bryce?
Apparently. Mm. It actually makes Tang Sanzang feel genuinely sad and start crying, too.
Wow. So Wukong approves.
He does. He's kind of amused, tells Baji that's perfect, don't stop until I get back, or you get 20 blows.
Motivation.
And Baji, proud of his new skill, boasts he could cry for 2 days straight.
Meanwhile, Sha Seng, the quiet one.
Ada just quietly lights some incense, you know, a more traditional sign of respect. Wukong's happy. Everyone's set in the right mood, even if it's a bit theatrical.
Okay, so the stage is set on Earth. Wukong takes off.
Yep, somersault cloud, straight up into the dark sky. Zooms right through the South Heaven Gate, bypasses all the checkpoints, just like he planned.
Heading straight for Laojun's place, the Tushita Palace.
Finds him there, in the alchemy room, fanning the furnace, making pills with his attendants.
And Laojun sees him coming.
And his immediate reaction tells you everything. He turns to his attendants and basically says, watch out, the pill-stealing thief is back. Wukong tries to laugh it off, you know, bows, says, hey, old official, why so guarded? I don't do that stuff anymore.
But Laojun's not buying it.
Not at all. He immediately brings up the havoc in heaven 5 centuries ago. All the elixirs Wukong ate.
Right.
How he ended up in Laojun's furnace for 49 days. Laojun even complains about the cost of the charcoal.
He remembers the charcoal bill.
He does. He acknowledges that Wukong's on this pilgrimage now, but then throws in a more recent jab about an incident at Pingning Mountain, implying Wukong was difficult about returning some treasures. Wukong kind of brushes off the Pingning Mountain thing, says Laojun's being paranoid.
Thing gets to the point.
Yeah, explains the whole Wuji King situation, the demon, the body, and the well, his master's compassion.
And the need for a resurrection now.
builds it all up, then makes his request.
Okay, here comes. How many pills?
1,000 pills of the 9-turn return soul elixir.
1,000?
1,000. You can just imagine Lao Jun's face.
What does he say?
Calls it nonsense. Asks he thinks the pills are just like dirt clods. Scolds him. Flat refusal. Go away. There are none.
Okay, so Wukong's first offer is rejected.
Immediately. He drops the number. Yeah. Okay, hundreds will do that.
Lao Jun's response?
Still no. Flat out refuses again. How about 10 or so?
Is Lao Jun budging?
Nope. He gets really angry now. Calls him a troublesome monkey again. None. Get out. He seems absolutely firm.
So look like it's not happening.
And that's when Wukong switches tactics. He stops pushing. He just laughs and says, well, if there really aren't any, I guess I'll just go ask somewhere else.
And he turns to leave.
Turns and walks away. Looks like he's giving up.
But Lai Jun knows him too well.
Exactly. Lao Jun immediately thinks, wait a minute. This monkey, he's tricky. If he says he's leaving, he might just be planning to sneak back and steal them. So, worried about Wukong pulling a fast one, Lao Jun tells an attendant, call him back.
Ah, the bluff worked.
It did. Lao Jun relents. But only just barely. He says, you monkey, your hands aren't steady. Fine, I'll give you one pill.
One. Down from 1,000. That's quite the negotiation.
Massive drop. But Wukong, he's not quite done. He can't resist pushing his luck a little bit more.
What does he do now? He got the pill, didn't he?
He laughs again, that classic Wukong laugh. And says something like, hey, old official, since you know I'm so skilled, why don't you just jump out the whole gourd and give me a 60-40 split? Be lucky for you. It's incredibly cheeky. He's testing him.
How does Lao Jun react to that?
Wisely ignores the demand for a split.
Mm-hmm.
Just takes out his gourd, tips it, shakes out one single pill.
Just the one.
Hands it over. This is it. Take it. If it works, it's all your merit. Basically, now get out of here.
So Wukong takes the pill.
He takes it, but then the final bit of trickery.
Oh, what now?
He doesn't put it away safely. He says, hold on, let me taste it first. Make sure it's not fake. Don't want you fooling me.
He's going to taste the priceless resurrection pill.
He pops it towards his mouth like he's about to swallow it.
How does Lao Jun react to that?
Pure panic. The text says he lunges, grabs Wukong's head fillet, pinches his skull, shakes his fist, curses him. Terrified he's actually going to eat the elixir.
But Wukong's just messing with him.
Of course. He laughs again. Calls Lao Jun stingy, petty. Says, who'd eat your pill? It's not worth much. And then reveals...
He didn't swallow it.
Nope. It wasn't even really in his mouth. It's hidden in his throat pouch.
This what now?
The text uses pseudair. It's like a bird's crop or gizzard. Mm. Little storage pouch under his chin.
He has a built-in hiding spot.
Apparently. Almost like a physical symbol of his trickster nature. Lao Jun finds the pill there, gives Wukong one last sort of exasperated grab, and basically kicks him out. Go, and don't come back.
And Wukong.
Just thanks him and leaves.
Mm. Wukong thanks him, probably with a smirk, and heads back down from Tuta Palace.
Mission accomplished.
Zhu Baji, apparently crying his eyes out.
Huh, typical. But Tang Monk, he sees Sun Wukong arrive and immediately gets hopeful.
Straight to the point. He asks him, who dossier, basically, Wukong, you're here, got the elixir.
Shows how much faith he has in Wukong, really. But Baji.
Well.
Baji has to chime in.
Always. Being skeptical, right. Suggesting Wukong probably just nicked the elixir from somewhere.
It chuckles slightly. You can just hear him saying it, but Wukong, he just gets down to business.
Yeah, asks Xiao Wujing for water. There's that little detail about a convenient bucket near the well.
Right. Wukong gets the water, spits the pill out,
yeah,
and puts it in the king's mouth, carefully. Uses the water to help wash it down.
But it's not instant, is it? That's what's interesting.
No, not at all. For like half an hour, nothing happens except these rumbling sounds from the king's stomach. Just sounds. No actual movement. Wukong starts getting a bit antsy. Yeah, he worries the elixir isn't working.
Oh, but Tang Monk steps in here, and he's surprisingly insightful about it all.
He really is. He figures, look, the guy's been dead 3 years.
Yeah.
Swallowing isn't going to be easy.
Makes sense. And he thinks the rumbling, that's the elixir working.
Yep.
The blood vessels starting up again.
Exactly. But the core life force, yeah, that's gone. So what's needed now?
The crucial part. Wuxie, a breath of life.
And this is where it gets really specific about who can give that breath.
Right. Baji jumps forward like, I'll do it. Maybe he just wants to be involved.
But Tang Monk shuts that down immediately. And the reason is, well, it says a lot.
It really does. He says Baji's breath is Zhu Oki impure. Why? Because of his past. Eating people, harming living things,
Libby,
it's a direct link between past actions and present ability. Quite profound, actually.
Totally. So who does he call on? Wukong, of course.
Whose breath is King Ki pure? Because he lived this disciplined life, eating pine needles, cypress, fruits.
That contrast is fascinating. Pure versus impure breath. It's symbolic, you know?
Definitely. And the way Wukong does it isn't just a simple puff of air.
No way! It's described in incredible detail. He presses his thunder god mouth to the king's lips.
And breathes into specific points. The throat, then down through, to the, the elixir field, a key energy center.
And then back up from the foot.
Yeah, from the coin point on the sole of the foot, the bubbling spring point, all the way up to the shrine in the head. It's like he's restarting the whole system.
Wow, and it works instantly.
Pretty much. There's this sound, breath gathers, spirit returns, the king flips over, moves.
Then speaks. First word is Messar, master, recognizes Tang Monk right away.
Then he kneels, thankful, saying he remembers the ghost visit and can't believe he's alive.
What a moment. But Tang Monk, he's humble, points to Wukong.
Tells the king, thank him. But Wukong's like, hold on, a house doesn't have two masters.
He insists Tang Sanzang should receive the bow of gratitude. It shows this respect for hierarchy, even after performing this incredible feat. Wukong knows his place in their group dynamic.
So the king meets the others, Baji and Wujing, and the temple monks start making breakfast.
And they must have freaked out seeing the king, right? The water-robed emperor.
Oh, completely shocked. You can imagine their faces. Wukong has to explain what happened.
Tells them who the king is, reveals the plan to deal with the imposter.
Right. And then there's this bit about clothes. The king takes off his royal robes, the ig.
And the monks give him simple stuff.
Exactly. Plain cloth robes, a simple belt, basic shoes. It's like it's about survival and justice now. Then comes the leggage discussion.
Yes. Wukong, always practical, asks about the weight.
And decides the king can carry some.
Which leads to Baji complaining again, naturally.
Of course. Unfair. I carried his dead body all this way. Now he gets the easy job. Something like that.
But the king's response is quite touching, isn't it?
Very humble. He's like, I'll do anything. I'd follow you to the Western Heaven if you asked. Deeply grateful.
But Wukong has a plan, right? It's not just about making him carry bags.
Exactly. It's strategic. Only for 40 li, a specific distance, just until they reach the city.
What?
To basically arrive with the proof, the living king, right as they confront the demon. It's clever.
And Baji keeps grumbling about being the long-term worker. Adds a bit of lightness.
It does. So they leave the temple. Big send-off from the monks, 500 of them, with music.
Nice touch. But Wukong's focused, tells them politely to stop the music and just send the king's royal clothes onto the city later.
Practicality mixed with respect. They make good time getting to the city.
And Tang Monk recognizes it, Wuji Kingdom.
And the description of the city is quite something. Out. Orderly people, bustling scenery.
Magnificent buildings, too. The poem compares the palace to heaven. Seems peaceful.
Almost too peaceful, maybe. Considering what we know happened, it sets up a nice tension.
Definitely. So Tang Monk wants to do the usual thing, go exchange their travel papers at court.
Standard procedure. But Wukong's like, hold on.
That's his concern.
He wants them all to go in together. Strength in numbers. Better leverage against, well, whatever they find inside.
Smart. And then there's the whole bowing issue.
The full kowtow routine.
Mm.
Wukong puts his foot down. No way is Tang Monk doing that for an imposter king.
Good call. Shows Wukong's not intimidated by the fake authority.
Not at all. He tells the others, follow my lead. If I bow, you bow. If I just crouch, you crouch. He's taking charge, assessing the situation first.
Cunning. So how do they get in?
Wukong handles the gatekeepers.
Yeah.
Very direct. Presents their credentials, emissaries from the great Tang dynasty heading west for scriptures.
And the gatekeepers.
They're respectful. Immediately go to report their arrival to the court. Their official status gives them entry, at least.
The Tang monk, his disciples, and the real king of Wuji are entering his own palace. But the king, remember, was murdered and thrown down a well.
Right. But he's been brought back to life and now he's disguised. He's effectively a stranger in his own home. It's quite tragic, really.
Yeah, and the source gives us this really poignant detail. As he walks in, he's just silently heartbroken, you know, lamenting his lost kingdom.
Uh-huh. He thinks, my copper cauldron kingdom, iron-walled state, who knew it would be occupied by him? You really feel the weight of those 5 years of usurpation hitting him right then.
It's such a raw emotion right at the start. But Wukong, well, he's ever alert. He notices this, sees the king's distress.
He does. And he leans in, whispers a classic Wukong reassurance, tells the king basically, hide your emotions, don't give the secret away.
Okay.
And he adds, and I just love this part, this staff in my ear is itching for action. I guarantee I will beat the demon to death and sweep away the evil. This kingdom will be yours again before long.
That's not just a promise, is it? It's like a statement of pure disruptive intent. My staff is itching. He's ready.
He's practically buzzing. He's ready to just dismantle the whole lie by force if needed. So they proceed into the main hall, and they see these like 400 officials looking very stern, very imposing.
Right.
And they stop before the steps leading up to the throne. The officials see the group just standing there, not bowing, not offering any formal greeting when you entered the imperial presence.
So a major faux pas.
Oh, huge. The officials are described as shocked, even terrified. They see the monks as foolish and ignorant for this really basic breach of protocol.
It's the ultimate power move, isn't it? Or maybe the ultimate gaffe, depending on how you look at it, walking into someone's court and just ignoring their rules.
Yeah, it immediately puts them in opposition to the entire established order there.
And this blatant disrespect, it doesn't go unnoticed by the figure on the throne, the imposter demon king?
No, definitely not. He demands to know where they're from.
And who steps forward?
Who else? Wukong. He answers really boldly, saying they're from the Great Tang in the East, on a mission by imperial decree to fetch scriptures from the West.
Okay.
And he says they're just here to exchange travel documents. Like, it's just routine paperwork.
A simple administrative task framed within this grand imperial mission seems reasonable enough.
You'd think. But the Demon King sees the lack of the bow as the real issue. He's furious.
Right.
He basically shouts, what if you're from the East? I don't owe tribute to your court. I'm not connected to you.
Yeah.
Why the utter disregard? Why won't you bow?
And Wukong's response here is just brilliant. He doesn't back down at all. He flips the script entirely.
He really does. He laughs and essentially says, hang on a minute. My eastern land established the celestial court eons ago. We are the upper nation. You're a lower border state. Ancient custom says the upper emperor is like a father, the lower like a son.
Wow.
So you, as the son, should have come out to receive us, the representatives of the father nation, and you're demanding I bow.
That's a total reframing of the power dynamic. It's not just disrespect. It's like an assertion of a completely different hierarchy where they're the superior ones. It's so strategically audacious.
Oh, absolutely. And predictably, it pushes the Demon King into like absolute rage. He orders his officials, seize the wild monk.
And those 400 stern officials who were just frozen in shock moments ago, they eagerly rush forward to obey their king.
But Wukong is ready for this. He knew this might happen. He just shouts, points his finger, and bam. Uses the fixing body spell, the Ding Shen Fro.
And just like that, everyone frozen.
Instantly. The source gives us these really vivid images. Officials like wooden puppets on the steps, generals like mud figures in the hall. Just total paralysis in an instant.
That's incredible. What a dramatic demonstration of power. It completely neutralizes the immediate threat from the court itself.
Exactly. And the Demon King, seeing his entire retinue just, you know, incapacitated.
He decides he's got to jump down from the throne and handle it himself.
Right. He moves to capture them personally. And Wukong's internal reaction, he's actually pleased.
Really?
Yeah, he thinks, this is perfect. Now the real target is within striking distance. He's totally anticipating a direct fight.
But before that can happen, we get this unexpected interruption, don't we?
We do. The crown prince of the Wuji kingdom steps forward. Now remember, this is the son of the real king.
Okay, right.
He grabs the Demon King's robe, kneels down.
He asks him to calm down. And his reasoning is fascinating, isn't it? He brings up Emperor Li Shimin of the Great Tang.
Yes. Right. He leverages the very real power and reputation of the Tang dynasty under Emperor Taizong. He reminds the demon that Li Shimin is a conqueror.
Yeah, he claimed the throne, unified the empire.
And didn't stop there. Launched overseas campaigns. He's a big deal.
So the prince is making a political calculation here.
Exactly. He warns that if they harm the Tang monk, who he calls the Imperial Brother, the Great Tang will come for them with an army. And the Wuji Kingdom, with its, quote, few soldiers and weak generals.
Ding Xiaojian way, yeah.
It can't possibly win. So his suggestion is purely pragmatic. Don't kill them immediately.
Buy some time.
Right. Question them thoroughly instead, starting with that initial charge of disrespect. It appears strategic. And crucially, the source tells us the prince was actually just trying to protect the Tang monk. And the Demon King, surprisingly, listens to the prince's logic. He agrees to question them further.
So he demands to know, when did you leave the East? Why did the Tang King send you?
And Wukong just launches into the full origin story of the pilgrimage. No hesitation.
Oh.
He explains his master is the Tang King's sworn brother, Tripitaka or Sanzang. He recounts the whole complex setup. The Tang King's dream journey, triggered by his minister's dream execution of a dragon.
Right, the Jing River Dragon.
Which led to that grand Buddha ceremony, the Water and Land Dharma Assembly, to save souls.
A lot of backstory there.
Oh yeah, it's layered. And because of the master's compassion during the ceremony, Bodhisattva Guanyin appeared and instructed him to go west for scriptures.
And the master was happy to do it.
Yes, took it on as a vow for his country. Wukong even gives the specific date they got the travel documents from the Tang King, the 13th year of the Zhenghuan era, 3 days before the full moon in the ninth month.
Wow, very precise.
And then he quickly lists how the group came together, recruiting himself at Two Rivers Mountain, then Baji at Gao Family Village, Wujing at Flowing Sand River, and then just recently this traveling boy, or baggage carrier, Xing Tong Dao Ren at Beilin Temple.
And that last one, the traveling boy, that's where the Demon King sees his opening, right? He can't really poke holes in the main story or the established disciples.
Exactly. He focuses on the newcomer. He says, sort of, okay, you started with one, added three disciples, that's fine. But this fourth edition, this traveling boy, he's problematic. You probably kidnapped him.
Ah, so he's trying to find a weak link. He demands the traveling boy's name, his credentials, and orders him forward to confess.
And the real king, remember, is right there, disguised as this traveling boy. The source says he's literally shaking with fear. Zan Shan Jing Jing. He turns to the Tang monk, whispering, Master, what do I say? He's terrified of being exposed.
Of course he is. He's just a revived king, not a, you know, seasoned fighter or quick thinker under this kind of intense pressure.
But Wukong steps in again, smooth as ever. He tells the king, don't be afraid. Let me answer for you. He then addresses the Demon King, describing this old Taoist, the disguised king, as mute, deaf, and from a ruined family. Just painting this picture of a harmless old man.
Setting the stage.
Exactly. Right. He claims this old man went west in his youth and knows the way, and he, Wukong, knows his true root and origin. He asks for mercy and permission to confess on the old man's behalf.
And the Demon King agrees.
He agrees. He falls right into the trap. This is Wukong now performing a confession, but it's going to be the absolute truth, just framed differently.
And here's the peak, right? The performance. Wukong delivers the confession in rhyme, hiding this explosive truth in plain sight within this, like, conventional format.
It's brilliant. The rhyme, framed as the traveling boy's story, is actually the complete narrative of the usurpation, it says. The old man is from this kingdom, his family ruined 5 years ago. It describes the drought, the prayers, the lack of rain, the starving people, and the arrival of a perfected true monster, Quan Zhenguai from Zanyan Mountain.
The one who fooled everyone with the rain magic, the demon himself.
Exactly. The rhyme goes on. This monster showed his magic, then secretly murdered the king, pushed him into the garden well, and illegally seized the throne, all totally unknown to the people.
And the rhyme brings it right up to the present moment, doesn't it?
Right to their arrival. It concludes, luckily, I, Wukong, arrived, and with great power revived him. He is now willing to be a traveling boy and go west with the monk. And then the kicker. The false king is the Taoist monster. The Taoist, this traveling boy here, is the true king's substitute. Boom.
Wow. Yeah, the demon's just sitting there on the imperial throne in front of everyone. Then the second he hears Wukong's voice, things change.
Oh, yeah.
Instant panic.
According to the source, this bold demon king suddenly scrambling, like desperately looking for a weapon.
Any weapon.
And ends up grabbing a sword from a general who's just standing there, frozen stiff.
Literally frozen, right. Because Wukong used a spell. Exactly. It's almost comical, this powerful demon reduced to snatching a stunned guy's sword.
It really is. And what's fascinating, I think, is the contrast.
Between the demon's panic and Wukong?
Yeah. The demon's losing it, completely driven by fear.
Yeah.
But Wukong, he's calm. Strategic, even.
Right. He doesn't just, you know, blast off after the demon immediately.
No. He thinks bigger picture. He realizes the court, all the officials, they need to see what's really going on.
Okay, so that spell he uses to stun them and then wake them up again.
Uh-huh. It's clever. It makes them witnesses. It adds this layer of legitimacy to restoring the real emperor. It's not just Wukong forcing the issue.
It shows he's not just about brute strength. There's a brain behind the brawn, thinking steps ahead.
Definitely. Defeating the demon is part one, but putting the emperor back properly, that takes some finesse.
But, well, you know Wukong. He's not letting this demon just fly off after pulling a stun like that.
No way.
So the chase begins, right up into the sky.
And they have that confrontation midair.
Which is just unbelievable. The demon actually tries to play the victim card.
Huh. Yeah, basically tells Wukong to mind his own business.
None of your business. Can you believe it? After stealing a throne?
It tells you a lot about the demon's mindset, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, he actually thinks he's got some right to be there.
Wukong's having none of it, though.
Oh, not at all. His response is immediate, calls him a bold monster, tells him he should have run the second he sensed Wukong, puts him right in his place.
And then the fight starts.
A proper, serious battle. These are powerful beings clashing.
But strong as this demon is, seems like Wukong has the edge in a straight fight.
He usually does. Which is probably why the demon resorts to, well, trickery.
Ah, the classic villain move. When you can't win fair, cheat.
Exactly. He realizes he's outmatched in combat, so he retreats back down to the city.
And pulls his trump card.
His transformation trick.
Yeah.
And he doesn't just turn into anything. He turns into Tang Senzang.
Oh, no.
Perfectly. An identical copy of Wukong's own master.
Wow. Okay, that changes everything. The confusion must have been immense.
Totally. This is like a major turning point. It really ramps up the stakes. Suddenly, Wukong's not just fighting a demon.
He's facing his own master. Or someone who looks exactly like him.
Right. Imagine seeing two identical Tang Sanzang standing there. How do you know who's who?
And the danger if he attacks the wrong one.
That's the core of it. The risk of harming his actual master paralyzes him. His immense power is suddenly useless here.
It's a brilliant trap, actually. Purely psychological.
Yeah.
Brute force won't solve this one.
Not a chance. Wukong, the great sage equal to heaven, is completely stumped.
And who steps in?
Well, surprisingly, it's Pigsy, Zubaji.
Often the comic relief, right? But here.
Here he has this moment of, well, maybe accidental brilliance. He suggests something.
What's the idea?
Seems simple, almost foolish maybe. Hmm. He says, let's have both of them recite the special headache mantra.
The one that only Tang Sanzang knows. The one Guanyin gave him to control Wukong.
Exactly that one. You have to understand, these mantras, they aren't just words. They carry real power, real connection. This specific one has a direct lineage. Buddha to Guanyin to Tang Sanzang.
So it's like a unique key, a piece of knowledge only the real Tang Sanzang would possess.
Precisely. In a situation flooded with illusion, shape-shifting, all this visual trickery, Pigsy's idea cuts right through the surface.
It tests something internal, something real.
Right. And of course, the real Tang Sanzang recites it perfectly.
And the demon
can only manage gibberish. Blabbery nonsense. The source says he just makes meaningless sounds.
Exposed. Just like that. A simple test of knowledge reveals the truth.
It's really effective.
Yeah.
And once the demon's cover is blown, his advantage is gone. Poof.
So he tries to flee again.
Makes a run for it, yeah. But this time, it's different. Because Wukong isn't paralyzed by doubt anymore. He knows who the enemy is.
Ah, okay. The gloves are off.
Completely. And it's not just Wukong. Pigsy and Sandy join the pursuit. They corner the demon.
A team effort.
A coordinated attack. The source really highlights Wukong's confidence now. The fear of hurting his master is gone. He's ready to end this decisively.
About to deliver the final blow to this monster he's been fighting.
Poised for what the text calls a decisive strike, basically. The tension's definitely high.
But then, just before he can do it, the text says a colored cloud appears. Northeast.
And a voice booms out, Sun Wukong, hold your hand.
He stops, looks up, and who is it?
Manjushri Bodhisattva. Big entrance.
Yeah, Wukong bows naturally, and Manjushri says, essentially, I'm here for the monster.
And he doesn't waste time explaining why. He pulls out a demon-revealing mirror.
Ah, the classic mirror.
Yeah, shows its true form. And the description is, well, pretty monstrous. Glazed lamp eyes, roasted pothead.
Dark blue body, frosty claws, broom tail. This picture definitely looks the part.
For sure. So Wukong asks the obvious question, you know, why did your mount run off and why wait until now to show up?
And here's the first big twist from our text. Manjushri says the creature wasn't lost.
No. He says it was Hushi.
Sent by Buddhist decree.
Exactly. Sent. On purpose.
Okay, wait. Sent by decree. Why?
Well, Manjushri explains, goes back to the king of Uji, the place they're in. Apparently, the king offended Manjushri way back. The king was devout once, hosted monks. Buddha sent Manjushri, disguised as a normal monk, to help the king advance spiritually.
But the king didn't recognize him, I'm guessing.
Nope. Total opposite. The text says the king, in his ignorance, had Manjushri tied up and chucked into the royal water river.
Thrown in a river, a bodhisattva.
For 3 days and three nights. Submerged.
Wow. Okay, that's bad.
Pretty serious offense, yeah. The 16 golden bodies eventually rescued him, and he reported back to Tathagata Buddha. And that's why the monster was sent. The text is explicit.
To repay the suffering of those 3 days in the water.
Precisely. So Tathagata ordered Manjushri's mount, this lion, to push the king into a well and keep him submerged for 3 years.
3 years? To balance the 3 days?
Exactly. Perfect karmic balance. The text even uses the phrase Jonuluku.
Every drink, every peck is predestined, like cause and effect, written in stone.
You got it. And Wukong showing up basically marked the end of that 3-year sentence.
So the whole monster takeover was divine punishment. Orchestrated.
Seems so, according to this text.
But Wukong, ever the practical one, he pushes back, right? He says, surely this thing caused chaos for 3 years, harmed people.
Good point. But Manjushri counters with another surprise. He claims the monster didn't harm the populace at all.
Really?
Yeah, he says during its rule, the kingdom actually had Dongguan, good weather, peace, prosperity.
Okay, that's weird. Good weather under a monster king.
Strange, isn't it? But it addresses Wukong's point about general harm.
Fine, but Wukong brings up another angle, the moral one. This thing impersonated the king, lived in the palace.
Slept with the queen and consorts, yeah. Wukong argues that surely, Wukunjusin, it defiled them, wrecked the moral order.
A very valid concern.
Absolutely. And this is maybe the most unexpected part of the whole exchange, Manjushri's reply.
What does he say?
He just calmly states, Shus.
Which means?
He couldn't defile them. He is a gelded lion.
Wait, gelded as in castrated?
Yep, that's what the text says. The monster couldn't have committed that particular transgression.
I did not see that coming. A gelded lion monster sent for divine retribution.
It's quite specific, isn't it? And the text even adds Zhu Baji's reaction.
Oh, what does Baji do? You know it's going to be something.
He apparently walks over, touches the monster, laughs, and basically confirms it, using language implying it was physically incapable. All show, no go in that department.
Baji checking the monster's situation. Okay, that's certainly a detail. Very Baji.
Very Baji. And very literal confirmation. So Wukong, faced with this Buddhist decree, the karmic reasoning, and this very specific physical limitation, he backs down.
He accepts it, lets the monster live.
Right. Manjushri says a spell, the monster turns back into a lion, and off they go.